joining us today on The Culture Catch. The filmmaker, artist, and webmaster, Mr. David Lynch. Next on The Culture Catch. To thank today's sponsor, Poddango. Too many podcasts, not enough time? Let the station directors at Poddango sift through the mountains of podcasts to bring you the very best. Check out poddango.com. Joining us today on The Culture Catch, we're very honored to have Mr. David Lynch. David, welcome.
Thanks, Buster.
How did you make this movie happen? I know it was not as long as the Eraserhead project, but it was soup to nuts, start to finish, about a 3.5 year...
3 years.
3 years. Laura said 3.5.
Oh, wow. Maybe it was.
It took her that half year to get ramp up.
Mm-hmm.
No, what she said initially, you just started testing her. Was that your way of kind of trying to rope her into the project?
Or No. First of all, the way anything happens is with ideas. So you get ideas, and it's true that Laura said, I met her on the street one day, and she said, guess what, I'm your new neighbor, and she had moved into the neighborhood. And she says, we got to do something again sometime, and I said, yeah. I said, maybe I'll write something for you. And so for the next, I don't know, maybe month or something, I would write things, and I got a scene and gave it to her, and we shot it. And then I thought that was it, but I kept looking at this scene, and it held the promise of something more. And then when you kind of focus on a thing, they say where the attention is, that becomes lively. So when you focus or you put your attention on something, it kind of conjures up other things and new ideas come in. And so then the first things there, you know, started other things coming in. And one thing leads to another, and you're kind of rolling.
And do you find that, does your TM help in focusing in on it to then expand it outward? Because I practice Taoist meditation, and I know oftentimes to empty the mind, things then start popping into the mind that typically you wouldn't even allow into your subconscious, conscious, or unconscious mind.
Well, you know, TM is a mental technique that allows a human being to dive within and transcend. Transcend means to experience modern science's unified field, the Tao, the absolute pure bliss consciousness, and that experience of that field has always been there. Experiencing that field enlivens that, and you grow that,
right.
Grow that consciousness. When you grow this ball of consciousness, you can catch ideas at a deeper level. But you can catch ideas with a small amount of consciousness, but they're funnier when they get near the surface. There's not as much there. They're just you catch them at a deeper level. There's more there. And to me, ideas drive the boat. And but this experience of this, the absolute, pure bliss consciousness, it affects all avenues of life in a positive way. And this helps the artist so much. Happiness in the doing goes more and more and more. Energy goes more and more. Flow of ideas, intuition grows. Beautiful, beautiful stuff.
You know, I often felt like you were the metaphysical director in some ways because you allow the audience, your audience, to each individual in the audience walk away from your movies with their own perception of and their own subjective view on what that experience might have been, and to try to limit it by saying it's this, you've limited somebody else's.
Exactly right. Taking the joy away from them.
Because I may walk out of Inland Empire with a completely different take than Richard,
sure,
our producer. And he could say, well, I felt that this character's motivation was this, and
sure,
this was the theme. Do you feel that by trying not to define, it helps that individual reach that experience?
Absolutely. There's the film, and in my book, nothing should be added, nothing should be subtracted. That's it. And it's a certain way that feels correct for me, hoping it will feel correct to others. And when anything is abstract, you get varying interpretations, and it's the way it is. The more concrete it is, the less they vary. But cinema is this beautiful language that can show abstractions. Mm. So I love stories that have got a narrative, they've got a surface, but they've got this areas that are more abstract, and there, you know, anyone's interpretation is valid. Like I say, the frames of the film are the same. Same number, same sequence, everything the same, but every screening is subtly different because of the viewers.
Very good answer. At what stage in your career as a filmmaker, because I know that you were into the arts before you got into film, was that the theory or the universe that you migrated to when you started out in art? Or was it a moment when you saw Bacon's work or someone else's work that said, the abstract vision represents this for me?
I always had a feeling that for me, the thing should hold some abstraction. And I say another way is, or some room to dream.
Mm.
So, you know, like, a guy like Edward Hopper is pretty realistic, relatively speaking, but so much dream possibilities, and so that elevates that. It just goes somewhere, you know, way, way, way bigger.
Mm. And at what stage did film just? What was it that drew you to film then as someone who was an abstract artist?
Well, I wasn't always abstract, but I was in a studio one day. I painted it, a place I lived, but I was for some reason at the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts in a big room in my little cubicle. I told this story a bunch of times, sorry, but...
That's all right.
And it was at about 3:30 in the afternoon. I was painting a picture of a garden at night, mostly black, some little bits of green kind of eking out from this black. Suddenly I hear a wind, and the thing starts moving. And I thought, well, I would like to do moving paintings. And that led to stop motion, the idea of stop motion.
Now, you touched on something that I think is very important that I pick up in your movies, and that's sound and the use of sound. And your sound designs are as integral to the experience as the visual, the audio component. Was that something that always was part of your world, the sound?
Yes.
And the sound designs? And
sound and picture moving together in time. It's a beautiful thing.
And we call that what?
Cinema.
Cinema. Or the internet in these days.
It's all kinds of things. Motion pictures.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is that sound and picture always is going together. But the possibilities are there for some real, beautiful abstractions in that language.
Do you ever think of the psalm before you think of the picture? The
sometimes. Visual? Sometimes you get a sound or a piece of music up front. Sometimes ideas come out of music. And when that happens up front, many times I'll play a piece of music while I'm shooting. Nobody else hears it. Maybe the operator of the camera hears it, and I hear it, and the dialogue, you know, coming through with it. As an indication, an aid to make sure the pacing is right and the thing feels correct, the music sort of, you know, when it's flowing with the music, it's right there. But mostly sound and music comes later.
Even in your abstract sounds, you migrated to a world where you had beautiful voices. I'm thinking of Julie Cruz, and then you worked with the gal from Miranda Sex Garden, Jocelyn Montgomery. Is there a certain quality that you looked for when you were listening for a female voice, or were those just chance encounters?
Chance encounters. A lot of things come from chance encounters. Both of them have beautiful voices. And then I've worked with Rebecca Del Rio, another beautiful voice. Right. And now Christabel is another great singer, and she sings in Inland Empire. You know, like many times, it's a combo. When I get together with the composer Angelo Badalamenti, he and I together would do a certain thing. Angelo with Sammy over here, those two would do another whole different thing. Combos, you know, they are, you know, magical things.
There seems to be always this wind sound. I don't know if that's the right term.
I like a wind.
Yeah, is that the correct term?
There's sometimes sound... wind, yeah.
Well, that sound in Eraserhead, it's like a whoosh or a wind. It could
be... there's many, many sounds in Eraserhead. Yeah. I love... Eraserhead is... it takes place, in my mind, in an industrial... industrial neighborhood, and kind of born out of my experience in Philadelphia. And so that whole world conjures up many different sounds, and you know, so each idea, you get the indications of sounds, real specific sounds, and then abstract sounds approaching music and musicals. And so it's, again, driven by the idea.
Are there any new musical collaborators that you're nurturing right now?
No. My friend Dave Jericho died, and he was a great, great guitar player, and we had a group. I wasn't a player. I was a producer and lyric writer. But Dave sang and played guitar, and there was a drummer and bass and keyboards called Foxbat Strategy. So there's six songs that exist, and now trying with Dave's widow to put an album out in his honor of that music, which was done quite a long time ago. But I would have loved to, you know, work with him again in the studio. And... but I started singing myself now, so we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, the beauty of the internet and having your own space is it allows, you're so free, you're not encumbered by marketing guys saying you can and can't do that. You're
right.
Your own gatekeeper.
Well, you're never encumbered by marketing guys, no matter what.
Good.
So we all have freedom, and we all have the ability to catch ideas and do things, and the internet now is a home for, you know, for us.
When I was watching Inland Empire, one of the things I noticed was it would be the perfect cinematic moment for the iPod because there were so many close-ups, everything was shot very tight, and you know, if you're looking at an iPod screen that's 2.5 inches long, I thought, wow, this is the first movie that could really impact this medium. And everyone's talking about really wide when you're in tight. We shoot a lot of our interviews very tight that way as well because it's a different screen format. Was Was that just a random act? Am I imagining more?
No, but I wouldn't. I would hope that they wouldn't see it on the iPod.
Well, of course not.
But I'm hoping for maybe they already have it, where you take your iPod and you put it into a little holder that squirts a beautiful big picture on.
Well, they
the
have
wall,
that, yeah.
And beautiful speakers to the left and the right of that, or even you know, a bunch of speakers.
Surround.
So you crank that bad boy and turn the lights low and go into the world. And it's real unfortunate to see a thing very small and with bad sound and think that you've
had
seen
experience?
The picture.
Yeah, okay. That's a very good answer, and I didn't mean to denigrate the experience
cool.
at all.
Unfortunately, the world's going that way.
Well, we have kids who are just migrating into a world. They don't know David Lean movies, mm-hmm. Lawrence of Arabia, and
yeah.
these huge cinematic movies.
Mm-hmm.
But when you were shooting the movie, though, using PD-150s, I mean, you were completely taking it into this nanotechnology, this new film experience from the big, huge canisters and everything. What was that like? Was that liberating for you to an extent?
Liberation with a capital L.
What was the hardest thing to work in? Was it not having the light that maybe you wanted, or these cameras are
no,
so...
No, no, no. You can get it just the way you want it. And you just can get it that way easier, quicker.
Right.
And you see what you've got right there. And if you don't like it, you can fix it. In film, you don't see what you've got till you see the dailies. Now, there's tricks and all this kind of stuff where you, based on, you know, more and more experience, you can tell what it's going to look like, but you actually don't see it really until you see it in the dailies.
Right.
And even then, you don't really see it because it's a one light daily, so it might be off, it might be too bright, too dark, you know, weird color. So here you see exactly what you're going to have, and you can tweak it and move that little bit and stop. That's it, and you're rolling. It's beautiful.
You shot over 200 hours. True.
I don't see these kind of things.
Or you shot a lot.
I you know, you always shoot a lot. And it's part of the process.
Well, maybe not in film. You wouldn't shoot as much as you can with video,
yeah,
right?
But a lot of people shoot a lot. The reason I shot, there's always three cameras going. A lot of times, two of them, you know, were, you know, kind of bogus because I'm always in the way. but you can really stop worrying about the expense of film and... That's another really freeing aspect.
And were you using traditional mics, the traditional film mics with the PD-150s?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, we're lavalier mics and a boom mic all the time.
Right. Laura said sometimes she'd turn around and there would be a mic in her face.
The mic on the camera. Sometimes I forget to take that off.
Okay.
And I'd be getting in there and... I think I poked Justin in the eye with the microphone a couple of times.
I got to ask you about the angriest dog in the world. That was
sure.
My first introduction to you. Actually, my second, because I saw you Eraserhead first, and then I moved to L.A., and that was in the L.A. Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen?
I got a drawing somewhere of the first one I did. I did a little drawing of this dog, and it just looked angry. And I just would... look at it again where the tension is, that becomes lively. I wrote the little introduction sometime. This dog is angry, and I wondered why it was angry. And then I do the house and the fence, and it came about that the thing would never change. Three daytime frames and one nighttime, so there's a passage of time. And the reaction of the dog would be to the dialogue from mainly a couple in the house in the hopes that it would conjure a laugh. And that was the thing that grew out of that drawing.
And then I feel like you migrated from that to Dumbland with the angriest man in the,
right.
in the world. He's kind of almost an extension of that in
he
some
is
ways.
In many ways, absolutely right.
I find
anger is pretty humorous sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Especially when you see yourself angry. People have said if you videotape yourself when you're angry or your spouse and that you play it back, they'll never respond that way.
Yeah.
What would you hope people walk away with from the new movie?
Like every movie, an experience that they couldn't have any other way. That's it.
And how about this uplifting Nina Simone track at the end? It was so fabulous.
Well, there's an upliftment before that. It's a continuation of something that was just occurring, and I love that song, but you can love songs and they don't work in a certain thing, but that thing worked to me on, you know, many levels.
Right. When you find artist music in your movies, they always seem to, you walk away with that. And that's very hard to do in cinema. When you see a movie, oftentimes the music could overpower the scene. You may not remember the scene, but you remember, oh, that was a song in that movie.
There's a whole thing going on now where you'll get the stars of the day and build in these little, you know, transitions. I mean,
it's like, is this a soundtrack or a movie?
Yeah. The music should marry to the visual and enhance it. If it's not marrying, music can actually hurt a film. We all know that there's films that where the music, it would be better to have no music than the wrong music. It's a feeling, and when it's wrong, you can feel it, and when it's right, you can feel it.
Right.
And it's like no matter how much you love that song, it's not working there, and you've got to take it out and find the thing that works.
Right. But did that just come to you, that Nina Simone song?
Yes.
That's fantastic. I don't know if this is a fair question. What one movie in your catalog best represents you as an artist?
No, it's not really, because like
you grow from movie to movie.
They're not representing me really anyway. They represent ideas. So it's like, which of the nine little dogs in the kennel represent you? None of them represent. They're dogs, you know. and you love the little dogs, but they don't represent you.
So the your movies are like your children, your puppies.
Yeah. They're all different. But they're all finished little children. The fingers and the nose, like that.
Fantastic. And just as an aside, you used Ray Wise in your TV show. Ray Wise is from my hometown of Akron, Ohio. The only reason I know that, my father says, I know this actor. I taught him, driving Ed way back when. Ray Wise, look him up in New York. Sure enough, I did. He was in Tooth of the Crime, the Sam Shepard play at La Mama.
Yeah.
And then I remember he showed up in Twin Peaks on TV. And I just thought, well, the guys from Akron can make it. All roads lead from Akron, Ohio. And from Montana, and they all go back.
Sure. Doesn't matter where you start.
That's it.
Everybody who's known was at one time unknown.
What are you working on next? What's in the pipeline?
I'm going to try to do a good job distributing Inland Empire, helping to distribute it. Then I got to catch ideas.
Okay. Well, you'll be meditating on that, and I love that. And lastly, I guess we really should talk about Laura's turn. I know you're really pushing hard for her to get the Academy nomination, which I think she's very deserving of. It's a breathtaking performance. You pulled quite an interesting, stunt or a way to generate some publicity for. Could you mind sharing that with us?
All I did is go down to Hollywood and La Brea with two signs and a cow. And within an hour or so, there was people coming up, and we were shaking hands and talking, and the word went out. And it's for Laura, because She gave a great performance, a really, really great performance. And in our world today, studios have a patina. Big budget, it has a patina. It's a false, it's a fool's gold in my book, a fool's gold. But it's still working. When you throw money at a thing and do it a certain way, a traditional way, I'm just hoping that through all this, the people see, you know, what Laura did and admit that it's the greatest.
Well, I hope they do, and I hope that we can help you in that cause. And
thanks a million.
And help you marketing this really, really thought-provoking, amazing gateway.
Bless your heart, Victor.
All right.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with David Lynch. I'd like to thank today's sponsor, Poddango. There are a lot of podcasts out there. Let the station directors at Poddango sift through the mountains of podcasts and bring you the very best. This is Dusty Wright. We'll see you soon. Converge is the word.